Hello, everyone, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We're so glad that you have joined us tonight for another discussion. And as we keep on our track this month about nurturing your child's soul, we're also going to talk about nurturing your soul as a parent. And what does that mean when sometimes we go through lots of discouragement? Because that's just sometimes the nature of having a child who struggles. And we have a very special guest tonight. His name is Jason Haag. Thank you for joining us tonight, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And Jason is, well, a husband, father, pastor, and storyteller, definitely all of those things. And he has just written a book called Aching Joy. And it's following God through the land of unanswered prayer. This is what it looks like. But in such an incredible book. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight and just the overall premise of what it means to keep loving and hoping when life is discouraging. And I hope that you are just encouraged as you join us tonight in our discussion. Please put your comments and your questions up as we go along, and we're gonna build those into our conversation tonight. So Jason, as we get started, why don't we just hear a little bit about you and your background, and then we'll kind of dive into some questions and just talking out about how do we approach discouragement and make it through with joy?
Yeah. Well, thanks again for having me. I've been married for almost 20 years.
Awesome.
And I have 5 children. We have lived in lots of different places. And we were just talking about living in Minnesota, living in Texas. I also lived in Northern California for a while. And now we live in Oregon. And in those different places, we've been in ministry in various capacities. We worked a long time with Youth with a Mission.
Okay.
And so we've been on staff here at Christ Center Church in near Eugene for about 8 years now. And I'm the associate pastor. My wife is the children's pastor. And so we get to work together and have a great time.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And yeah, so we had shared, we've lived in 3 of the same 4 states that you moved into. And so, yeah, it's interesting how God brings your paths across. And so, so this book that you wrote, and really it started out with a blog. You started blogging.
Right.
And why did you start blogging?
Well, I initially started a blog because I wanted to write fiction. I wanted to write novels. And so I thought I need to get, you know, start putting out some short stories or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then one day I just decided to write about my relationship with my son, Jack. Mm-hmm. And he was, I think, 6 at the time, something like that. And I wrote this little blog post, and it was called Why No, My Son Is Not Rain Man. And just a real simple little thing. And that was the first thing that people actually seemed to read. Had a few people share it on social media, like, wow, this is really interesting. This is really insightful. And I thought, oh, really? Okay. And then I would try to go away from it, and then I would come back to it, and I found it cathartic. So I just sort of, it became kind of a public journal of my processing. Because I was coming out of a really sort of numb, dark season. I was that like very typical special needs dad who got, you know, really distant and, you know, just all of those really cliche things.
Exactly. Yeah. So, we don't talk about that enough, is the typical special needs dad, because they kind of are closet dads. And a lot of them leave too. We see a lot of divorce in our families. And it's just encouraging that you are being so real about what processes you have gone through in adjusting to that.
Yeah.
And your blog does a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I started doing, is just sort of like putting things out to say, well, this is kind of what I'm going through. And I tried to never let it get too dark, because it's not all dark, but then sometimes it's just, you know, you've got to say, this is really, really hard. And that's just that. I just want to be honest. This is really, really hard. Then, you know, then when you have the positive posts, you know, like, this is really, really good, then people are celebrating with you. So for me, a lot of this journey has been to learn to embrace the sadness and then to embrace the hope. But just to be honest about where we are. And you're right. Dads are not good at this. I know it's hard for moms and dads, so I'm not saying it's harder for them. But one thing that is harder for dads, I think, in general, is dealing with emotion. And like, just how do you process through emotions? Because, you know, we're supposed to be tough and we got this. You know, we got, well, with autism, you don't got this. Like, what are we dealing with? This is extremely hard for anyone to understand. And there's so much tied in with that. So we need help.
Yeah. Well, and you say that in your book about, you know, autism is, it's so different in every case. And so you can't say, oh yes, I have a child with autism and this and this, and this is what's going on with them. It's new every day.
Yes.
And, you have to take that on, and it can be discouraging because you never know what the new day is that you face.
Right.
And you just have, you move forward. And so processing, and, you know, starting, and for you, it was writing. And I know for other people, it's other things. For me, it was writing as well. Doing a lot of blogging.
Yeah.
There's a lot of blogs out there and there's a reason for it.
That's right.
Not a lot of them are read, but it does help us think through what we're going through. And to put something on paper makes it real, doesn't it?
It does.
You have to admit it. And,
that's right. And frankly, sometimes it, I always thought before this sounded like super artsy and weird, but sometimes I don't quite know what I think or how I feel about something until I start writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes clear and I'm like, oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So writing can be a wonderful, and it doesn't have to be blogging, it can be journaling as well, but sometimes you have to force yourself to put. Yeah. Sometimes you shouldn't make it public. You shouldn't. I've deleted stuff. I've had rants. I've had angry emails, things. And my wife's like, you're not putting that up. Don't you dare. So.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have that spouse that can counteract you as well.
Yes, it is.
Definitely. So I just want to remind our viewers, if you have something that you want to say or a question you want to ask, definitely chime in as we're going along. But so I think as we're getting started, loving and hoping, those are two different things. And yet it affects everything in our lives, our relationships, not only with the people around us, our child that is struggling, but also in our marriage, which we kind of talked a little bit about, developing friendships, mm-hmm. And also our relationship with God. So how do we reorient ourselves to be in a place where we can be ready to accept what those relationships bring into our lives, as well as how we give out of them, because it takes on a whole different context when you're tired, mm-hmm. when you're spent, and when you don't always feel like sharing.
Right. Yeah. I think for me, the difficulty, one of the biggest difficulties has been dealing with my expectations of how relationships were going to look, how, you know, daily life and goals and all those things were going to work. And I had to go through a process of coming to terms with what actually is, mm-hmm. not the lost thing that I wanted, not even reinventing some other future that's going to look different, but what actually is. And so that, you know, that comes into play, of course, with my son, Jack. But it also comes into play with my relationship with my other children, my wife and other people, mm-hmm. to be forthright and to be able to say, this is what's going on with me. You know, I need to talk to someone, or I need, you know, I'm just going through a rough time right now. And so I'm just going to tell you that, you know, that kind of stuff. And I actually, you know, my son has had a history. He had regressive autism. So he was, you know, progressing normally until he was almost two and then sort of lost all his vocabulary. But he has had many, many regressions where he learns all this new language and new skills, and then it just gets lost. So that's happened so many times. And last year he had a particularly harsh regression. And he had a surgery on his brainstem that had to do with motor skills and things. But then for the next 3 months, he just got these severe panic attacks at night where he was just screaming at the top of his lungs. And he would just be saying the names of his movies, and he would want someone to tell him the names of his movies. And so night after night, we had very, very broken sleep. And it was just so, he was 12 years old, you know, and it's just so disheartening of like, oh, we're going through this again. And I was talking with my senior pastor, I'm the associate. So we work together and he's, you know, guided me through a lot of this. And we just took a walk one day and I just said, man, I just need you to know how hard this is right now. I'm not crashing and burning. I'm not going back into depression, but I just really need you to know this is hard. And I might need a little extra grace. So just being able to communicate that was very helpful. And of course, when somebody knows that, they're like, man, absolutely, you know, and then he's able to come alongside and give that kind of support. That's what I think we need to be able to do.
Yeah, and it's almost a process of getting outside yourself to figure out what you do need. I know for me, especially having autistic tendencies myself, I don't know when I need that. And so I'm thankful that I have a spouse who tells me I need that, but I have to be willing to listen to it as well. Yeah. But knowing yourself, knowing what you need and not being afraid to ask for it, because you think you're going to ruin the relationships around you. It's scary, but it's something that you need to do.
I think you're exactly right. And I think that's frankly what we do with ourselves and our relationship with God. Because you're like, if I admit this, then that means I'm weak. Well, we're already weak, so that should be okay. But you know, people will throw out things like, well, hey, God never gives you anything you can't handle. And things like that, which is like a phrase that's loosely based on a scripture verse, very loosely.
Right, but not in context.
No, it's not. And so things like that. So then we start telling ourselves, oh, well, you know, I must be extra, extra, extra broken. I can't admit this. So we can't admit things to ourselves. And then we certainly can't go to God with those things. Mm-hmm. And so then we end up keeping God and everyone else at arm's length, because we're simply not able to share those things. But I'm thinking about my relationship with my wife, and it's when we can be really vulnerable with one another and share what's actually going on that we find ourselves drawing closer to one another. And I think that's true with God and with others. So with God, sometimes that means you just got to tell him what's on your mind. You just got to tell him how much you're hurting. And not be afraid that you're going to hurt his feelings.
Oh, yeah. I love that. And you share a story in your book about that. And that so resonated with me, because I had an episode once where I was in the bathroom screaming at the top of my lungs, God, and my kids are like, are you cursing? I'm like, no, I'm praying. But I mean, and you even say this, he can take it.
Yes.
And we think that we have to be strong, but we are weak. And once we admit that weakness and that he's strong, that's when things start to change.
Yeah, we're kind of a mess.
Yeah, really
but
are.
But he takes us that way. And I'll tell you, I've been doing a study on the Psalms the past few weeks for my church, and just going through every psalm slowly, and the broad range of emotion that the psalmists bring is just staggering. There's just like such hopelessness and like, Lord, why haven't you come? Or such anger or the sense of abandonment or exhilaration. All of these things, they're just coming wholeheartedly and telling him. And I think today, a lot of us would be like, well, I can't do that. I can't tell him that.
That's not church etiquette.
I know. It's so silly. It's like, well, first of all, he already knows that you feel that way. And I think sometimes he's just waiting for us to be honest.
Definitely. So true. Yeah. And it takes some dying to self that I am not perfect and I will never be perfect. And, you know, I just have to, and you know, I've seen my children's struggles as a blessing in disguise in that particular area. that they have pointed out my flaws better than any child who would have been on the normal.
Right.
Yeah. Because if I would have parented, I always say if my daughter would have been my first, I would have said that every other parent is bad and crazy because she was so easy to parent, but yet I had my boys first. And that kind of put me in my place. So, yeah.
See, we had our two neurotypical daughters first, and they were, you know, I mean, we had our ups and downs like any other parent, but
yeah.
We thought we had it down, you know.
Exactly.
And then that came along, and it was like, well, we got to throw this playbook out. And it was, it's like, man, any sort of watertight parenting philosophy that we thought we had was just gone. So yeah, that was really humbling for us. Yeah. But it was also really good and good for us because it is, it does bring us down and reminds us of our need for the Lord and for community and all of that that we were built for. Mm-hmm. We weren't built to just, we got this. We're all by ourselves. That's not what we were made for. This isn't an individual sport. Life is a team sport.
Mm-hmm. And I think our society, especially the U.S., we do segment ourselves off. And I think that makes it even more difficult for special needs parents.
Sure.
Because we're supposed to do it on our own, where I think in other cultures, family is nearby and community is much closer. People rely on one another, where we're looked at as weak if we don't. And how have you found with developing like friendships and relationships with people that maybe don't even understand, you know, aren't special needs parents. How do you go about bridging those gaps with other people to let them know that, you know, I need a friend.
Right.
I need you to be my friend. And I need you to understand that this is what's going to be involved in being my friend.
Yeah. That's such a great question. So, and I think this is really key. I think for all special needs parents, but for dads again, I've noticed this is a really big issue. I remember there was an article in the Boston Globe a couple years ago talking about how men in their 30s start drifting towards isolation without even really realizing it. And suddenly they look around, they don't have any close friends. So that's very common. And I think with our peculiar struggles as special needs parents, it gets more difficult. And one of the reasons it gets difficult, I think, is because we know that our situation is unique. And it is. And so what we're really wanting is someone who just understands, man, somebody who gets it. Like we use that phrase all the time online.
Yeah.
I want someone who gets it. And we do. And that's a beautiful thing when you have those friendships come along. But I also think that's really short-sighted. It's
so true.
We can't wait until we have the perfect situation in order to form community. And I'm not sure that it is the perfect situation because there's value and beauty in
that's
diversity of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give an example. I have dear friends named Josh and Carly, and they don't have special needs kids, but they're foster parents. And in fact, they've gone on to adopt one of their foster kids, and they have, you know, a lot of struggles. But man, it is amazing to watch what they do, and I can't relate with all of what they have. Josh can't come to me and say, you know, that thing of, you know, you're loving this kid, but you're going to have to give him back. If he said that to me, I'd be like, no, I don't. But he's able to share those things from his perspective. Like, he has real unique challenges, and I love to be able to learn from that because he's an unbelievable dad, you know? And so for us to be able to share very different things, there's huge value in that. So I think sometimes as special needs parents, we are way too choosy. And I love that support groups are like wonderful, and I think we should pursue them. And I think we should pursue relationships with others who are going through similar things. But we can't let it stay there. We need to have a diversity of relationships and to not think that our struggles are so peculiar that we can't relate to anyone else, because that's just not true.
Exactly. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that, because otherwise we'll never find those perfect people that have the exact seems like, well, it's not perfect, far from it.
Right.
They can get it.
Yeah, or even like, I mean, sometimes I think, you know, it's actually really silly because, you know, I could have friends that have a special needs daughter, and maybe that wouldn't be quite good enough because, oh no, I have a son, they have a daughter, we can't really relate, or maybe theirs is younger, we can't really like, how exact do our paths have, exactly parallel do our paths have to be? So
right.
I think a huge part of this for me is just finding people who will listen, finding others. Mm-hmm. Who will listen and understand and just will be able to tell, man, I'm having a really hard time. And especially if we're believers and opening that up with our church family and people, you know, the body of Christ, that I need prayer in this area because I am really not doing well. Mm-hmm. Or I need support in one way or another. We get that by being vulnerable, and sometimes that's uncomfortable, but you're right. Will you be my friend? Like, sometimes it's as simple as that. It feels awkward. Like, hey, I've got a lot of, you know, my life is weird, but I really like you. I would like to be your friend. That's super awkward, but it's good enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that church does give you those opportunities. I know our church that we go to, it has small groups, and it's where we can develop those relationships. And yeah, nobody's anywhere like one another, but we come together as community and we share our experiences, and to find a loving group of people who are willing to be compassionate and willing to learn. And I think we in turn have to be willing to learn from others as well. And you talk about in your book, how not to compare, because that is where discouragement can really get us down, or being envious of someone else's situation. And there's the flip side,
right,
of, yes, I'm needy, but I don't see the neediness of others, you know.
Right.
And we often will compare. I mean, I've got a very good friend that's single, and sometimes I'm very envious of her quiet life.
Right.
But there's so many struggles, though, as we've gotten to know each other over the past 20 plus years, that, you know, I don't struggle with, but only in getting to know her do I realize what she goes through, too. So what are some encouragement that you have for parents in, you know, battling against those things, I guess those lies, basically, that say, you know, we put up those walls.
Yeah.
That we put up in forming relationships with others because we prejudge.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think this is an issue that's not unique at all to special needs parents. And part of it is very practical. Part of it is, I think we spend too much time on social media because we look around and everybody, of course, puts their cool vacation pictures up or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I mean, I was just thinking, my wife and I were able to take my two daughters up to see a musical in Seattle last week. We've never done anything like that. We just had this wonderful time. We stayed in a hotel, you know, Broadway show, Pike's Place, all these great things. We had a great time and we got good pictures and put them up. But I was thinking later, I'm like, I wonder if people think like that's just what his life is like. Like, they think like, oh, this is what they do. They take all these trips or something. It's like, no, I just put up this one thing. And we need to remember that people post things, they're not showing like all the really hard stuff.
Exactly.
And sometimes it's because they're being dishonest, but sometimes it's like, why would I want to show you the temper tantrum my kids just had? That's
weird. Right, exactly.
So I think stepping back from social media is actually is very, very healthy. In this, there's so many anxious things that come from too much social media engagement. And it has a way of turning on that comparison machine. And it's just hard to turn off. And, so for me, what has been very challenging, I don't say that I have mastered this or any of this, one of these things when you put yourself out there in a book like this, it's like, oh gosh, people think I own this like 100% of the time now, and it's just
right.
Not true. In dealing with this particular issue, what I've endeavored to do is to turn it around, to turn this whole thing on its head, in this way. Like I mentioned, my friends Josh and Carly, you know, they they have a son that has the same name as my son, Jack, and he is also turning 13 this month. Like, my son just turned 13. And he is this like amazing kid. He plays basketball, baseball, all these things. And I look at like their relationship and how he's grown, he's becoming this adult. And if I'm not careful, I can start to be like, you know, start to be envious of their relationship and all the things that their son's able to do and all of these things, and then start feeling that. But the thing that I've tried to do is to turn that around and be able to say, you know, look at their family and look at how God's blessed their family. Isn't God good? Like, he has blessed them. He's blessed their son. And look at the beauty of that. Look at the young man that Jackson's becoming, and how awesome that is. And it can be super easy when we're in, you know, a long season of disappointment or frustration that God's not coming through. It can be super easy to start thinking God just doesn't care much about my situation. God can't act. Is God even good anymore? Mm. And so to be able to look at somebody else's blessing, and instead of reaching out with envy, to reach out with celebration, to say, that is evidence that God's still good. That is evidence that God cares, because look at how he's blessing them, and look at the beautiful things he's doing with my next door neighbors. And okay, that's not my celebration per se, but I'm going to borrow that celebration, because it has nothing to do with my situation anyway. And I think special needs families, we need lots of reasons to celebrate. That's why we celebrate small victories, which is a mantra that we all have, you know.
Oh yes.
We celebrate small victories, and I think we should celebrate our neighbors' victories as well. I think
it goes that, back to that scripture, rejoice with those who rejoice.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Cry. I mean, just, we have to be a community, and right. to be able to embrace each other's highs and lows. That's right. Community.
Yes. And when we begin to do that, I think what that does is it diffuses the envy. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
it's like it, instead of it becoming this cause for jealousy, it becomes a cause for joy.
Right. That's so true. Very true. Yeah, I love that. We get so caught up in what we don't have.
Right.
That we forget all that we do have and all that we have to share with one another.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good. I had a question on my head and then I totally lost it. So hopefully it comes back.
Sorry, that's a long answer.
I know what I was thinking about. The scripture verse that you pointed out, James 1:17.
Yes.
Every good and perfect gift. Yeah. I loved that. Can you explain to our audience just the process of how God provides what we need to keep us going. And it's that hope in the everyday.
Yeah. Well, you know, James 1:17, every good and perfect gift comes from above, you know, from the Father of lights. Mm-hmm. And I don't claim to think, you know, I don't necessarily know if this is what James meant, but there is a real truth that I've latched onto, and I'm pretty sure it's not heresy. It's actually very simple. Some gifts are more exciting than other gifts. I remember when I was turning, probably six. I remember this one Christmas. I think we all had like a Christmas in mind that was like the best Christmas.
Right.
And it was me and my three brothers. We had opened our presents and it was fun. And then all of a sudden my parents like, oh, there's one more. Oh yeah, there was one more. Okay. It's in our bedroom if you guys want to go. So we just take off running and we run in and there's brand new bikes for all of us. And it blew our minds and it was the best. Now, that was a perfect gift.
Mm-hmm.
Now we had some other Christmases that we didn't get a new bike, but we got good gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it's like, those are just good gifts. So there's perfect gifts. There's good gifts. Like, they're not all like equal. And I think one of the things that we as special needs parents, I think, can start to feel is the absence of that one good gift, whatever it's, you know, we're praying for. So for me, for a lot of times it was language. My son is still functionally nonverbal. And so, you know, I so craved conversation,
right.
You know, and I just pray for that, Lord. And when I didn't see it happening, my heart would just sink more and more because I'm waiting for that perfect gift. But right. All along, there were little things that he was doing. And because I wasn't looking for him, I was missing them. And it was my wife that kept coming and saying, can't you see what's happening? Like, look at the way he's growing. And I'd be like, sorry, I don't see it because I wasn't looking.
Right.
So I think there's a place in all of us that if we would begin to open our eyes and open our hands to receive the things that God's doing, not just the extravagant ones, but to look for the smaller ones too, because there's, again, new sources of joy. This is what we need. We need new sources. We need new wells. And,
exactly.
and he's trying to give them to us a lot of times. And it's, we just need to open our eyes.
Right. We kind of trample over them while we're running to try to get to that big thing at the end. And yet I read another scripture verse and I talked about it in my daily devotional, but just how the seeds that we get daily, you know, that what God gives us, our daily bread.
Yeah.
Are we running the marathon past that bread and not getting nourished? Because those things, I kind of played off of what you were talking about. And then my morning devotional just added to it. And was like, I'm running this marathon without stopping to get nourished. And I'm going to just fade really fast.
Right.
We do that a lot because we do get so stuck on, this is my goal. This is where we have to be. And yet God says, stop.
Yeah.
I'm giving you this today.
Right.
So I love that. It was such an good encouragement to just reflect on. And I think, you know, God will continue to feed that as, you're, again, if you are just joining us, I'm talking to Jason Hagen. He's the author of Aching Joy, Following God Through the Land of Unanswered Prayer, and definitely a must read. So where can our viewers, find your book? I know it's on your website is jasonhag.com.
Yeah. You can also go to achingjoy.com and there's links to that on Amazon, but it's on Amazon. It's all on Amazon. On
that's YouTube. Where I bought it. Okay. I've got a viewer who, has a comment here. I'm going to add it up. Rachel says, I especially love the story in your book about how you stepped into Jack's world by spending time with him every day on his terms. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. We had, you know, one of the best pieces of advice we ever got in dealing with our son was to enter into his world. You know, it's easy to want to pull our kids into what we're doing. But I had a friend of mine who was a missionary and I met him and his philosophy was, this is incarnational parenting when we step into their world. And I'm like, okay, that's language I get, you know, and that's what they do. They step into different cultures in order to receive. We began to just spend parts of our day up just doing whatever he was doing. You know, if that meant flapping, he likes to flap socks or whatever and put up his favorite pictures and flap, things like that. Drawing pictures of his favorite movie covers. He likes movies a lot. Things like that. But what started to develop, he just started to become more comfortable with us. We didn't have any huge breakthrough moments, but what we had he just started calming down with us and he started communicating with his movie lines, with his these quotes, because he's got so many of them memorized, you know.
That's amazing.
So he started being able to share some of his emotions by quoting something that we knew that was in context and expressed what he was feeling.
Right. Yeah. That it is interesting. You know, having grown up with some sensory autistic tendencies myself, my parents would often just push me off. They didn't understand me. And so it was, don't deal with Peggy. She just wants to go off and be quiet. I really wanted to connect, but I didn't know how. And so taking that step to enter your child's world on their terms, may not make any sense to you as to what's going on, but they so badly need you to understand them from their point of view because they can't bridge that gap themselves.
Right.
And it develops, and we're talking about, you know, hoping and loving, that love relationship with your child. And it's the same way God comes into our lives. He comes in on terms that we understand.
Right.
Not the way his nature would want it perfectly, because we can't handle that. Right. And so oftentimes we do have to take that incentive to go outside of our world and into our child's. And that looks different for every one of them. And so, yes, that is definitely a good story. Thanks for bringing that up, Rachel. It's encouraging. And I love that your son quotes movies and how he shared about how he brings up some of the funniest quotes too, that makes you all laugh. And the processing ability that he's using to express his emotions through his movies is definitely unique. And
It was encouraging because it was showing us that that he really is thinking through things. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could say this happened all the time and every day he was employing speech in this way. That's just not the case. Mm-hmm. But he's done it plenty of times, and he'll do it. Every once in a while, he'll pull something new out and it just kills us. I mean, he had this one, oh man, he's playing outside on, he's sitting up on our car. And my daughters are running around the front yard and just having a good time. And he sort of slips off and he falls into the driveway. And Jenna, she runs over to him and goes, Jack, are you okay? Jack, are you okay? And suddenly he takes this line from Kung Fu Panda, where Dustin Hoffman, where Po, Jack Black, thinks that Master Shifu, who's played by Dustin Hoffman, is dead, but he's just lying there. And so he goes, Master Shifu, you all right? You all right? And Shifu looks at him and he says, so Jack used what Shifu's line, and it was this: I'm not dying, you idiot. Like, that's what he says to his sister.
And of course she knew where it was from.
Oh, yes. Instantly, they all just die. They're like, oh my goodness, Jack, that's amazing. So we'll get some of those where some of it's just lightning fast. But the coolest thing about all of it is that you see this with all of my kids, that they have learned his language and they've learned the things that he loves. And so just the other day, Jack was really agitated about something. And I was trying to get pictures with him. I just put up a blog post. I just wanted to get a quick picture with him, and he wouldn't smile. So I said, Sam, come, do that thing from Turbo. And he just goes through and he starts doing all these lines from the movie Turbo. And Jack's just like, he's got this little, like, he's trying to be obstinate and not smile. He's like,
that was funny.
He just get into it. So it's a beautiful thing to see how they've learned his language and mm-hmm. they continue to do it.
Definitely. Yeah. I have adopted siblings. I had shared that with you. And one of my siblings had only a brainstem. She's passed away now, but we didn't know what was going on. And the advances in communication with children and even adults who aren't verbal have increased dramatically. And my parents went through the training to do eye communication. And it was amazing what she understood once they cracked that code. And it's communication is our way of connecting. And when we can't communicate, then we really can't connect. They're your children, no matter where you think they're at, you can communicate at some level with them. It's just you've got to find that bridge. Reading your book, it was a pursuit of yours. I mean, that was one of the things that you really struggled with, was the lack of communication, but yet it drove you to keep going.
And it still is a struggle, I'll be honest. It's not, like I say, it's not like every day we have these beautiful moments. It's still hard. It's still the thing that we want so badly, but he's given us enough to know that he's really trying, first of all. Mm-hmm. And he's given us to know that he is thinking through things. And if he can slow his mind down, and if he can, you know, sort of take charge of his limbs and all of this, then he really can communicate.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. It's a process. And
yeah,
we're talking about that earlier. It's just, you know, we take one day at a time, and, one good gift.
That's right. That's right.
Going. Let's see. Trying to think of what else I have. If you do have questions or comments, please do to share those. But let's see. We talked about relationships. Trying to think if there's anything else in here. You have a quote. It says, "Hope needs to breathe, and dreams need redemption."
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I for me, the pursuit of hope and the pursuit of joy, which is really what the book is about, and what my journey was about, looking for those, it wasn't a straight path. That's what I realized. It wasn't just point A to point B. It meandered, you know, and then, mm-hmm. you know, when you have it, it needs tending. Like, it's not just, oh, good, now I have hope again. Whew, now it's all good. In fact, that was one of the things that my blogging journey really showed me, because I'm like, oh, I just did yet another post about hope and how I didn't have hope. And like, well, I did one 2 years ago about that. Wait a minute. Did I learn anything? What just happened? But it's just, there's levels to, there's layers to this, and it needs to be tended like a fire. You need to continue to feed it and you nourish your own soul and all, you know, just all of those things. And so that's when I say hope needs to breathe. We have to give ourselves space. We have to give room and then continue to feed that. I think one of the things that happens so often is that when our expectations are shattered initially, then we think that the things that we dreamed for, the things we really hoped for, we would never see. And in some cases, that's true. Sometimes the specifics, we have to put those aside, right. And we have to get a new playbook. But there's sometimes I think the things that we really are hoping and dreaming for, we release too soon. So for me, you know, one of the stories I tell in my book is how when Jack was born, part of the expectations that I had and the hopes that I had was enjoying sports with him. It's just a little silly thing. But you know, my family, we grew up watching football all the time. Just loved sharing that together. And I was looking forward to sharing that. And he was almost born on the Super Bowl. My wife went into labor, in the first quarter of the Super Bowl. Yeah. And she actually said to me, Peggy, she said, we can stay till the end of the game.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what she said. Now, I thought about it, but I didn't do it, because I thought, I'm going to tell this story for the rest of my life, and every woman I see is going to say, you did what?
Right, so, exactly. You had already had two children before. You kind of knew that.
We did. We knew it would take a while. But anyway, so the reason I bring that up is I had, you know, I had to give that whole dream up early on. Like, okay, we're never going to want, you know, that's not going to be it. And that wasn't the totality, but it was just one little thing. But what my heart was really longing for was just like to enjoy something with him and just to be together. So I let that go years ago and just decided that's not something that's going to happen. But now on Sundays, he goes home. We have two services at my church. He goes home after the first service and I come home. And in the fall, I say, you know, Jack, what are we going to do today? He says, first church. I say, okay, first church, then home. I say, then what? Then football. And he started asking for it. He started asking football, dad. And so now, on Sunday afternoons, I come and I lay down on the couch and he sits next to me and watches football. He's not always paying attention. He's running around flapping his things, but we're together. And so for me, when I say that hope, that our dreams need redemption. I think sometimes, I don't know if this makes any sense, but sometimes it's like we have these daydreams early on, and we have these expectations, and they're very simplistic, and we want to go after those things. I think a lot of times that our daydreams have to first be broken. You know, we have to face disappointment before they really become meaningful. Mm-hmm. And so I face disappointment, but now it's like, now it's meaningful. Now the fulfillment of the little part of that thing is actually really meaningful. Like, oh, I know how hard I fought for that thing. So rather than letting hope die, when the disappointments come, rather than letting them die, that we can feed them. We can tend to the little bit of hope that we might still have left. Maybe it's just embers, you know, but to blow on those embers and to continue to move forward, to continue to pray. And the fact is, we have no idea what might happen.
Exactly. Yes. And we almost feel like we're setting ourselves up for disappointment, but yet, you know, it's interesting because I don't think when you were thinking of watching football with your son, that you thought of watching football with your son the way it happens right now.
Right.
But the way God allowed you to release that perfect image to then take what he has given you is what you have. And but then you can embrace it when you don't let it all go, but then when you do let enough go.
Right.
And so it's that balance of God has given me a dream, but can I take out of my head the way that dream is supposed to come about and look like?
Right.
I think we get the two confused.
Right.
Because God wants us to dream. He puts dreams. I've talked to one of my friends about this a lot when we were on the phone, because she's like, Peggy, God put this dream in my heart. And I'm like, yeah, but it may not look like what you think it's going to look like.
Absolutely.
But yet, because that dream's there and he is continuing to stir your heart, even when you say, I'm willing to give it up if this isn't your will, then it is something he has for you.
Right. And like, I think like so many other things, it's holding something open-handed, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard, you know, it was hard for me because I thought I had to kill all the daydreams, you know, get rid of it all. Like, it's never going to happen. So now you might only be a little bit, maybe you'll be a little bit happy someday. And I think that was a mistake. It's one thing to let them go, but it's another thing to just be determined that you're going to be miserable, or that you're never going to have some of these blessings that God might actually give. Right. So hope, this is one thing I say really strongly in the book. Hope is not ours to kill. It's not.
Yeah, that's so true. And being someone that's hopeless isn't fun to be around as well.
That is very true, yes.
So, yes, definitely. But yes, we have to put ourselves in a place of vulnerability.
Right.
And we almost feel like we're vulnerable enough with what we've been through.
Right.
And so how do we as parents handle that being open and yet not, I guess, not suffering under the weight that we feel like we're taking on by saying I'm broken, but I'm willing to be broken more.
Right. Well, I think it's, I think we have to stop living in the past. I think that's a big part of it, that we have to live in what actually is, or stop living in the land of, you know, what might be. Mm-hmm. We struggle with that. We struggle with, man, I thought it was going to be this way. Or, you know, what's it going to be like in 5 years when he turns 18? You know, how are we going to, all these things of what might be. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, tomorrow has enough troubles. Isn't that what Jesus
said? Exactly. Yes.
And that's not saying we don't plan. Obviously there's plan, all of that, but so many times we get stuck in like almost like a different dimension, you know, either the past or the possible future. And we can't do anything about those things, but we can do something about living today. And what are we actually facing? What are we actually facing? And then we can face God and other people and ourselves with the needs that are there. Like, okay, right. here's where I'm hopeless today. Here's where I'm empty today. Here's where I just need to be affirmed. I'm a good parent, right? Like, you know, whatever those things are. Exactly. Because it really, I think so much of this, I mean, we keep coming back around to being vulnerable and being honest. And that's where so much of this starts and ends.
It really is. And we don't live in a society that embraces that very well. I know I had a friend that posted something, you know, on Facebook, and people just started reaming her about how you got to be strong. And, you know, it's not good to be weak. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to agree with you, but yeah. It's not popular. It's not, we just we'll get beaten down, but yet God says, when you are weak, I'm strong.
Right. And you know, one of the things, there's a lot of this that happens online too. When somebody expresses their feelings online, particularly about dealing with this kind of issue, parents, a lot of times can get really beat up by expressing, you know, that they're having a hard time. And cause you know, what we all want, whether it's self-advocates who have special needs or whether it's parents, what we all want is for parents to get to a place where we can embrace them and know them and see them and have joy and be the parents we need to be for them. Right. We all want that. And I just maintain that in order to get there, we can't just talk ourselves into it, or you can't just tell someone the way they ought to be feeling. You can't tell your friend, well, wait a minute, you should be happy about this. Don't you see all the gifts your child's going to bring? Because they might not be able to see that or feel that right then. So just, it's like, I've never been able to tell someone how to feel and have that work.
No.
It just doesn't work.
No way.
It doesn't work with our children, I'll tell you that.
It doesn't work when I try to tell myself how I'm supposed to be feeling.
feelings are so, they're just rascals, you know? They don't do what we tell them to do. So in order to get to that place where we all want to get, that place of acceptance and joy and affirmation and all of those things, instead of just trying to make that happen, we have to actually go through a process. And that means we have to start by admitting all, you know, even the ugly things. What are the ugly things about us? You know, what are the ugly things going on inside me? Do I resent God? Do I resent my child? Like, that's ugly, but can I express that? Because I have to get that out and say that's going on inside me. So then how do I deal with that? How do I move past that? And we just have to, with whatever those feelings are, in order to get to those places, we have to deal with them. We have to go through them and not around them.
Yeah, so true. Judy made a comment. You're making a good point on dealing with feelings.
Thank you, Judy.
Yes. Well, we forget that our feelings are what they are.
Yeah.
They are reflections of our perceptions. And what, you know, like when you were talking at the very beginning, you had to blog to figure out what you were processing. And our feelings are part of what takes us through that process. And we can't ignore them, because if we try to ignore them, then we aren't going to get the full picture, and we aren't going to understand what we're going through. And only when we see that full picture can we start to deal with what we need to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
This has been great. We've just got a couple minutes left. If you have a comment you want to share, definitely get that up on the screen soon. Again, Jason's book is called Aching Joy. It's like this. You can find it on, I've got a lot of little note things here, but I have written notes throughout the whole thing. Actually, I was up from 1:30 to 4:30 in the morning on Saturday. My son's like, what were you doing? I was like, I was reading.
But that's awesome. That's a great compliment.
I couldn't put it down. Yeah. So definitely, but you can go to, you have two websites, achingjoy.com.
Achingjoy.com is the book website. Yep. So there's links all over there. The book, by the way, is also on audio, on Audible, or Christian audio as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a great narrator on there named Adam Verner. He did a phenomenal job. So yeah, you can get it all over the place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm still definitely blogging about my relationship with Jack, at jasonhaig.com.
Yes, jasonhaig.com. And you've got some great videos too. And yeah, Jason's a great storyteller. And you know, that is what I was telling you before we started this broadcast, is your storytelling draws the reader in, because we experience your experiences with you. And when we share experiences, as I'm learning, is that that we see part of our story, and we see the similarities, the parallels of where God has crossed over in our processing and in our own stories, and we start to redeal with them. It brings up memories, our memories again. Judy, can you publish a print context for the book? Yes, I will put the links in the feed once we get done here, so that you can click on those and find them right away. So great. So, and if you buy it on Amazon.com, I want to put in my little plug. You can use Amazon Smile and pick Sped Homeschool as your nonprofit of choice, because we get donations. So awesome. Being a nonprofit, we love that. But definitely this was so good. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to really share with us and be real, because I think we need to do that more. Like you say on social media, we don't do that very often.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, I think it's good for us to remember too, that sometimes social media is not the best place to vent all the time, right? You know, have someone in your life, they'd be like, yeah, you know, I think that's just for you and your circle of people, right? Yeah. You know,
exactly.
A lot of people like, I did put myself out there and it blew up in my face. I'm like, yeah, because yeah, maybe we should just be careful. Just, you know, it's not, internet's not really a safe place. It's
no,
just not.
It's just not. No, you have to be very curated with what you put out
it's
there.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. But if God lays it on your heart, then it's my morning devotionals. God said, you've had enough just one-on-one time with me. Now you need to start sharing. So every morning on my personal feed, you will find my devotionals.
Awesome.
I never know what I'm going to say. So it's always interesting. So, but thank you again for sharing with us.
Yeah, and thank you for having me.
Yeah. Definitely. I hope more people will read your book and that you start getting. We'll definitely be republishing some of this broadcast throughout next week, starting Sunday through next Saturday. And just let everybody know that's watching, we are doing a series now per month on our broadcast. So this month we're focusing on the soul and the soul of your child, as well as yourself. Like tonight we were talking about parents. Next week, our broadcast is going to be on Wednesday, not Tuesday, so be aware of that. But I'm going to be talking to Elaine Hall, who is going to talk to us about adapting religious instruction for special needs kids. And she has a theater program, and she's helped a lot of churches be able to adapt their programs for children with special needs, including her son, who is autistic. So she's got a lot to share with us next week. But thanks for joining us, everybody. We appreciate all of your support at Sped Homeschool. Definitely, we keep the conversation going all week. Join us on the support group, where you aren't going to get a lot of negative. We actually ask how we can pray for you and what are your small celebrations. And we just want to surround everyone who is homeschooling children with special needs. We know how hard that is because we are there or have been there. So definitely join that group and start joining us in the conversation until next week. Otherwise, check out our brand new website. It's been up now for a week and a half and it's awesome. So go to spedhomeschool.com. And I have to thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding this broadcast and for viewers like you who donate on our website. Thanks, everybody. Thanks again, Jason. And
thank you.
See you all again next week. Bye, everybody.